floor.
Welcome to the Prophecy Chronicles with your host, Paul Richard Price.
And hello, everybody. It's Paul Richard Price here with another edition of the Prophecy Chronicles. And my guest tonight happens to be a great friend of mine and the owner of the network, Joe Montaldo. And if anyone doesn't know Joe, well, let me explain. Joe is the founder of ICAR and a researcher into the abduction phenomenon and the paranormal as well as UFOs. And I'd like to thank you, Joe, for being on my show. And how are you doing today?
Pretty good. It's my pleasure. I always like coming on the shows on the network. I actually prefer to do the shows on the network. I mean, I've been doing a lot of radio shows lately, but I do prefer to do the ones on the network because because it's our network. I like to keep it in the house, I guess, is what I'm saying. But thanks for having me on, man.
Well, let me go ahead and do something here first real quickly. One thing I wanted to ask you real quickly, if you don't mind, is how is it that you get involved in the first place dealing with the abduction phenomenon?
Oh, yeah, that's a damn good question. A friend of mine... Well, actually, it started when I was in the Navy. A friend of mine used to tell me about, you know, he knew some people that had alien abductions. And, of course, I got to be honest with you, Bob. I used to tell him, man, them people need to seek serious medical attention or psychological attention. He said, no, Joe, I'm sorry. But this went on for about a year, and then I got out to service, and I met some people that were very close. Well, one of the persons I met was very close to me, but a couple of them were just a group of people. Well, the lady started telling me about her alien abduction, and, of course, I looked up at her like, you have lost your flipping mind. Now, this is a well-educated woman who had a very good career, had a family, had a lot to lose if this would have came public. So for the whole time I'm thinking, why in the hell would she lie to me like this? What is it? Why? So I started asking around. I started talking to some of the other contactees, and I realized a lot of them were actually everyday people who had good jobs, good careers, families, that had something at stake if this was to go public. So for the life of me, I was going, well, they can't all be crazy. Some of these people, well, come to find out, the majority of the contactees I've interviewed have above average IQs, usually 110 or higher. And I'm kind of like, what the hell? Why would these kind of people actually do this? So the more I looked into it, you know, and I said in the beginning, I looked in and I thought they were crazy. The more I looked into it, I found that there was more to it. After about 5 years, I had talked to 300 or 400 people that were supposedly contactees when I was working around. I was like, damn. So I decided I would join MUFON. And when I joined MUFON, a group of us got together, and we spent about another 5 or 6 years going through all the cases MUFON had, every case we ever heard of, every case we could find online, every case we could find overseas, which actually at the time only totaled about 4,700 cases, I think it was. And we did a comparison study to find out what the similarities were. After that, I realized that there was actually something physically real going on. This was not in people's mind. There was something going on. And while it was going on, there was a couple of psychologists that had gotten involved that had, you know, reviewed some people and said, well, there's nothing wrong with these people. Some of them even said they examined the symptoms of shell shock and things along those lines. So after all of that time, it did take me about 10 years before I decided that this was a real phenomenon. It's not that I didn't think there was something going on. I really did. I just, at the time, wasn't sure that it was actually alien abductions. You know, let's be honest, you know, alien abduction is kind of a hard thing to swallow, man. And it did take some time. But now, you know, here we are later. ICAR is over 20,000 members large. We've got more than 13,000 people we've interviewed over the last 25 years. And, you know, and by the way, while I'm on it, somebody asked me the other day, how could I do 13,000 cases? Well, guys, be realistic. I just told y'all that 5,000 of those cases would move on and they were done by a group of investigators. The other 7,400 cases was actually done by ICAR and the members of ICAR, not just Joe. Now, until recently, there was only 10 or 12 people, maybe 15 people, that were doing investigations, which is still a lot. Today, on an average day, I talked to 30 or 40 investigators in about 9 or 10 different countries. Matter of fact, I was just talking with the new head of India, who's a PhD down there, teaches at one of the colleges. And he was telling me about 400 or 500 cases that they're going to review in India. So this thing has bloomed and expanded, especially in the last 7 or 8 years. It has really exploded into something major. And because I always get flack about the 13,000, but in the grand scheme of 6 billion, that's nothing. And in an organization the size of this one, it's really not a very big number. I just never understood why people had such a hard time with it. But, you know, it's not a big deal now. There's a lot of people working on right now in the virtual auditorium. I see 4 or 5 investigators.
Well, one thing I want to bring up real quickly here is a little bit about your background that I know. You were working as an electronics officer, if I'm correct, if I remember you telling me correctly, many years ago in the Navy. Is that correct?
Yep. Avionics, electronics specialist is what I was. I worked aboard the USS Nimitz.
Well, one of the things that I've heard is that, I've known some former naval personnel, one who's a good friend of mine who was a naval diver, and he was even former Navy SEAL, who told me that he had witnessed a UFO submerge itself into the water, came straight down and went into the water, and then scooted on off underwater as a USO. The thing about it is, I believe that the military has more data and information than what they're particularly seeing right now, not only on the UFO and USO scenarios, but on the abduction phenomenon. And I believe that they are watching it very closely. Now, am I correct on that?
Yeah, actually, the Navy always has. You know, it was funny, when I was 18 in the Navy and aboard the USS Nimitz, the pilots used to come in all the time. And they would talk about all kind of stuff they see. Now, the official stance of the U.S. Navy is you are to report these things and not say anything about it. In other words, you report them to the officer on duty, the watch officer on duty, and the watch officer on duty will report them to the appropriate person in charge. And then from that point forward, it depends on what you saw, how it will be handled. If it was just a typical sighting where you may have seen a fast mover while you were cruising along on patrol, it will be reported as such and left alone. If there was some kind of contact or some kind of close encounter, meaning that the plane got very close to the craft or things along those lines, then, of course, they may actually come out and interview the pilot. And I have personally seen pilots be interviewed for a UFO sightings. Now, I can honestly say while I was in the Navy, I never saw a UFO, at least nothing that I would consider to be an alien craft. There was one particular morning when I was stationed at Alvin Callender Field in New Orleans, that the base alarm went off because some poor little schnot, first time working the tower, seen this triangle floating at the end of the runway. Well, come to find out, it was 7 Harriers in formation. They were waiting for the permission to approach the runway. But, of course, he alerted the whole base saying that we were being invaded by aliens. It was just funny as hell, actually. It wasn't that funny because it was 5 o'clock in the morning, but still, it was pretty funny if you were there, you know, when you looked out the window, because when everybody looked out the window, you could see them sitting there, but I instantly knew what they were. I was like, you could actually see the flame coming out the bottom of the planes. But the guy panicked. But it is something, and I have never met, by the way, to date, a Navy pilot that did not see something, okay? On the USS Nimitz, I was friends with more than about 50 of them. When I was stationed at Alvin Callender, there were about 30. Now, what people don't understand about Alvin Callender, it's a joint strike base. It's Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard's got their our plane stationed there as well. We also got Eye of the Skies and Hurricane Hunters there as well. We also have the Air National, whatever it's called, for the Army there as well. And it's a joint strike base, so we actually get to talk to pilots from four or five different branches, including the Marines. They all seen something. The flight line sergeants used to tell me, the master chiefs used to tell me about stories about stuff they heard or things they saw themselves. So it's not actually uncommon for a Navy pilot or an Air Force pilot to see something. It's just uncommon for them to talk about it in general public. And this always bothered me because it suggests that there's a lot more activity going on than most of our ufologist friends realize. It's just they don't want to talk about it. They just don't. And, you know, after I got out of the Navy, I had a couple of them actually introduce me to some commercial airline pilots. And about one out of every three commercial airline pilots I talked to had a sighting. So if you take that and correlate that with the Navy, 50% of all the pilots in the sky have probably had some kind of sighting. Now, it doesn't mean that these are all alien aircraft by any means, but it means there's something going on and we should be paying more attention. If you have pilots, trained pilots, and a lot of people don't understand that a lot of commercial pilots were ex-military pilots. So these guys are very well trained. They're very observant. They got everybody's life in their hands when they're flying, and they really are paying attention. And they are considered impeccable witnesses. But still today, they give us trouble when the pilot calls in a UFO. He's seen an alien. Maybe we should suspend him. It's ridiculous.
Well, and I agree with that totally. I mean, our pilots are trained very well, and most of them, all of them are college graduates before they ever done the super training to become pilots. So, I mean, they're not just fly-by-night individuals. They're very well-trained, very well-educated. And if they say they've seen something that they can't explain, you better bet your ditty that, you know, they do and have seen things that cannot be explained. Well, and I will talk more about this later. I do want to bring up later on with the alien abduction versus the mill phenomenon.
Yeah.
And being that we are talking about the military right now, how many military personnel that you've had the opportunity to talk to have said that they were abducted?
You know, that's a very interesting thing. I have been working with Katarina Wilson, Melinda Leslie, Marion Dottacato, Jim Sparks, and a few others, Nier, Isley, and a couple others, who were either in the military or had someone in the military who have had an experience. Now, I don't want people to take this out of context, okay, because really and truly it is probably one. Melinda's going to get mad at me because I say it's about one in every 5,000. She says it's probably about one in every 100. There's a big debate on how many of these actually have happened. I mean, I was in the military, and I am a contactee, mind you, but I did not have any military abductions while in the military. Not to say my wife and I had a bad experience with the military in Gulf Breeze, Florida, but I was already out of the military at the time. I had been out for about 5 years, actually. So it's one of these things that it's a tough thing to really put a number on, and there are a big group of us working on. If you caught the Coast to Coast interview that I did just recently with Melinda Leslie about this very subject, you will hear us talking about what we consider to be a military abduction and how many military abductees they are. Now, I want people to understand there's two slices to this pie. There's the slice that you're in the military and you're having abductions. And then there's a slice that you've never been in the military, but the military is actually abducting you. And they actually are usually for different reasons why. It's one of the reasons why I rewrote the Betty and Barney Hill case. Betty and Barney Hill's case is classic military abduction. It is not classic alien abduction. It is classic military abduction. Betty and Barney's best friend was ex-CIA, or actually was CIA active at the time. Several of their friends were Air Force. They got stopped by somebody on the side of the road, dressed in military uniforms, that escorted them from their car to a spacecraft. That is not alien abduction. If you really want to hear the lecture, I did a lecture on this at the X conference just recently. And you can get the CD and take a listen to it. I mean, I get into quite a bit of detail, and I use cases like Katarina Wilson's case and Marion Dottacato, Leah Haley, Carla Turner's, and several other cases to explain why. Because let me, right quick, because I don't want to take up all the time, but Carla Turner, Marion Dottacato, Katarina Wilson, Melinda Leslie, Jim Sparks, and at least a dozen others who have military experiences, had military abductions, were almost identical to Betty and Barney Hills, but they did not say they were aliens. They said they were military, okay? Betty and Barney Hills, and I think what happened here is, if you've ever heard the regression tapes of the Hills, or if you understand what went on, they were in Canada the day before the abduction happened in the United States. The Hills lost a full day. They did not know what hotel they stayed at or where they had had breakfast that morning. And when they asked for directions, Betty and Barney described the person they asked for directions classically different. Now, this is classic alien abduction, by the way. Missing days, the whole nine yards. For the 60s, this was classic alien abduction. But when they got into the United States, they talked about people standing on the side of the roads, people looping their arms under them, walking the ship. Betty said, the guy said, come along with me now. The faster you do this, the faster this is over with. I have never heard an alien abductee ever say that, ever, period. And then there was classic, what we call terrestrial technologies involved. Needles in the stomach, hair, skin, nail, fluid samples where they actually scraped skin, took hair samples. This is a contaminant study is what this was. I don't know how many of y'all have been in the military and understand now. I know there's some people in the room will understand what I'm saying, but if you've ever been contaminated by anything, the military will come in and take hair, skin, nail, and fluid samples to find out the level of contamination. What Betty and Barney Hill described was a hospital room, classic hospital room, with classic hospital stuff in it, with classic hospital examination, none of which was extraterrestrial. I really think what happened in the Hills case is, first, it was poorly investigated, and secondly, the Hills memories got confused. They got confused with the alien abduction in Canada with the military abduction in the United States. This was just a poorly handled case. And there is actually, I've got about 10 hours on Betty and Barney Hill on why we think it's a military case versus an alien case. It's not that I'm saying it, and please, guys, don't take this the wrong way. I do believe that Betty and Barney Hill were alien abductees. I just believe the alien abduction happened in Canada, and it was a military abduction that happened in Connecticut. And this is a tough case. Okay, I teetered on the fence on this case for 10 years. But after reading the last two books, and I actually have a copy of the regression tapes, in case y'all didn't know that, after listening to the actual regression tape, I can tell you this honestly, not one time did Betty ever call these aliens. Every time Barney described these, he described these as men in black uniforms, black pants, black shirt, and a duck-billed cap. And in 26 years of alien abductions, I have never heard of an alien being dressed like that. Ever. So this was classic military abduction. Classic. I really think if they weren't the first military abductee, they were one of the very first military abductees. It's just one of those things that it was just a bad case. It was just handled poorly. And when you listen to the gentleman who did the regression, he tells you the same thing. He does not think it was alien. Barney tells you in his own words, he does not think it was alien. Betty was the one that was predisposed to the alien idea on the trip home. I think she just got confused. Like I said, I think the alien abduction happened in Canada and the military abduction happened in the United States. And I have to tell y'all, most of my fellow ufologists now agree after hearing the lecture and the coast-to-coast interview, because the evidence is compelling that this was not an alien abduction in Connecticut. But anyway, enough about all of that. What's up next?
Well, one of the things that I've done in my own research, I've read up on materials that have stated that the Central Intelligence Agency may have been using the abduction phenomenon to do covert operations on the civilian populace, and especially when it comes to genetic experimentation. And I'm writing a book currently, it's a fictional book. It's the sequel to the first book I wrote, The Prophecy Chronicles, Chronicle 1, The Chosen One, which deals with the alien abduction phenomenon, but giving it a worldly twist. As what if the U.S. military, in concert with former Nazis, had decided that they wanted to do genetic experimentation on the populace to find out, for one scenario I've heard, dealing with what happens to the human body after being exposed to above-ground radiation from the fallout from the nuclear test. in Nevada during the 40s and 50s up into the 60s, and taking genetic samples from there, as well as other particular issues dealing with that. And what have you learned on that, in that particular point, in general, about the military abduction phenomenon versus the actual alien phenomenon, alien abduction?
Well, you know, I'll backtrack you for a minute, because it's interesting you brought up about the contaminant study, because a friend of mine, who's a doctor, told me one time he was reading up on cattle mutilation. And he said, "Joe, this isn't alien, this is military." And I'm like, "What the hell do you mean this is military?" He said, "Think about it. There are no cattle mutilations east of the Mississippi River." And at the time, I didn't know nothing about cattle mutilation, so I called up Linda Moulton Howe, and I looked around, and sure enough, there are no cattle mutilations east of the Mississippi River. Matter of fact, 95% of all the cattle mutilations ever recorded happened to be in areas where, within 100 miles, we did what? Nuclear underground tests. And here's another little thing that most people don't realize. 95% of the parts taken from a cow is where the radiation would actually settle first. So it looks like that our government was out there taking cows, testing for radiation. And here's another little interesting thing that none of the ufologists ever want to talk about. 90% of the cows taken are taken from ranches that have insurance. Not from small ranches or ranches without insurance, but from big ranches where the cattle is insured and is not going to hurt the farmer to take the cow. I always thought that was very interesting and very fishy. And then the other kicker is in about 80% of the cases, they describe a black helicopter, not a UFO. And, you know, it amazes me. One thing I learned about ufologists a long time ago, they'll say whatever they want that'll help them along to do what they will. Not all of them, by the way, because I got a lot of friends that are really good in the field. But a lot of them will not, if the information does not jive with what they're actually preaching, they will just leave it out, let's say. I actually had to call a friend of mine who does investigations out in the East, and he's nothing to do with ufology, mind you. He's actually an investigator. And I had him check into the insurance thing out there to see if this might have been some kind of insurance scam that cattlemen were running. Because it is like 90 or 94% of the cows that were taken are insured. And that's just a really odd coincidence. And it's also a coincidence that, you know, that the parts that were being removed from the cow is where the radiation would, you know, group up first. So it does look like, and I'm not saying that all cattle mutilations are government, but I'm saying a good chunk of the cattle mutilations were the government testing for radiation contaminations in the groundwater and food supplies. And it actually made sense to me because the government could never actually say that they're looking into this, because let's look at it like this. The government said they were looking into Nevada and Arizona and New Mexico and Colorado and California for radiation contamination. Of course, everybody would sue the U.S. government. But by doing it this way, well, it's E.T. I got to tell y'all, ladies and gentlemen, I think the government blames a lot of crap on E.T. that has nothing to do with extraterrestrials. I think our government uses this all the time to hide projects that they're doing that they don't want to have to discuss or say, so all they do is say it was extraterrestrial. And, of course, once the E.T. stigma gets on it, then off we go. I don't know. All the ones, well, anything west of the Mississippi River is within in contaminations. I've seen Grant right there. I mean, in the room, not Grant, but everything west of the Mississippi would be in a contaminated zone. That's west of the Mississippi. Everything west of the Mississippi would be considered in a contaminated zone. Radiation underground testing would go from the Mississippi River to the Atlantic. I mean, to the west, the Pacific Ocean. From Canada to Mexico, that would all be considered areas where radiation could get into the underground water stream and contaminate. So, yes, everything west of the Mississippi River would be considered a contaminant zone. Because there was pretty much most of the states had some kind of nuclear testing. By the way, while I'm on this, I did not know that Louisiana and Mississippi had actually exploded underground nuclear weapons. I just found that out about 3 years ago. That floored me, by the way. I live in these states and didn't know this had happened. That just floored me. I mean, it just did. I was like, what the hell? Not even 50 miles from where I live in New Orleans, they had exploded two nuclear bombs. I was like, you got to be kidding me. So that tells you we don't have a clue what they were blowing up on the ground in the different states in the Union. And I think it's one of the reasons they were testing it. But I do think also, and I got to be honest about this, because I was talking with Linda Moulton Howe about this, I do think some of these mutilations are either extraterrestrial related or some kind of advanced technology, because there's a thing that they do where they actually remove the heart from inside the sac. Now, as far as I know, we do not possess that technology. The blood thing's not a big deal. Somebody said, well, they could never suck the blood out. I guess people don't know what a vacuum pump is or a laser field scalpel. We've been having vacuum pumps and laser field scalpels since 1960. I know that a lot of people aren't aware of that, but this is common stuff the government's had for a very long time. And I use vacuum pumps at work on a regular basis, and sucking out cattle blood would be all of about 8 seconds with one of these, especially with like one of the 5 horsepower. Oh, Lord, it would be gone. And that's the point I always want to make, because I don't want people to think that everyone I'm talking about is government. But there does seem to be a large chunk of these that are government, because I got to be honest with you, ET is not going to care if the cows are insured. That's a human thing. ET could give a good blank if the cows were insured. They would just take whatever cow they randomly felt like taking. The fact that they're taking insured cattle suggests that it's human, not extraterrestrial. Because, you know, it actually makes a good point to me, because cattlemen aren't going to get as mad if the cows are insured. It's not going to make a big deal out of it. But if you went out to a rancher's and killed 10 or 15 of his prized cattle and they weren't insured and you just cost this man 50 grand, he's going to come unglued. But if you went out and killed 10 or 15 of his cows and they were insured, he was going to make twice the money he would have at the auction, he's not going to bitch. He's going to say, oh, well, I lost some cows, I'll report it and go on my merry way. And that's common in this country. And remember this, and this is most important. The guy in South America who said his cows were being mutilated, they found them inside the tower where he keeps his water, and he admitted it was an insurance fraud. He was a general down there. He was actually prosecuted and admitted it was an insurance fraud. And while we're on this, several major ufologists went down there and said this was extraterrestrial, and it wasn't. It was a general from the government who was having his cows mutilated, and then after they were mutilated, they would put him in this tower to try to blame it on ET. In the end, the man confessed and was prosecuted. So it aggravates me that ufology won't mention that. They just skip over all of that and move on to the next thing. It's just one of those things. You got to wonder about these kind of things, Paul. You know, I got to be honest. In the last 10 years, since I got into public ufology, all in all, I've been disappointed by some of the things I've learned. There are some things that are obvious that we just kind of said, well, it doesn't fit what we're talking about, and that's why we don't talk about it. That's why I like people like Dennis Balthaser and Grant Cameron and a few others, because they speak their mind, and they really, really do their homework. And when you talk to them, you know they've really done their homework. But a lot, and like Richard, I know Richard Dolan does his homework. He really gets out and does his homework. Not to say I'm going to always agree with him, but they do their homework. But there's a lot of ufologists that just don't. They go read the article, read a story, talk to somebody, come up with a harebrained hypothesis, and then go spouting it off to the world. And that gets irritating. Because I wouldn't be discussing Betty and Barney Hill. If the case was investigated correctly, it would have never been classified as an alien abduction. So you got to wonder.
Well, also, let me bring back to a point here. You know, I was watching a documentary called Government Guinea Pig, and it was made, let's see if I can look at the name completely, Government Guinea Pig, When Uncle Sam Wants You. And what it dealt with, one of the subjects that the documentary dealt with was military abductions and how they may be being used to get people as subjects for unauthorized government tests of non-lethal weapons and other research, by the way. And then they also quoted other classified research that's been done over the years since the 40s dealing with drugs and radiation on the unsuspecting populace. And where I'm open, I mean, I've had near abduction that I do remember happening to me about 11 years ago now, where a group of aliens came through the wall in what looked like an open beam of light, and then were ordered to leave. And I remember that quite thoroughly. And what I'm thinking is, with the advanced technologies that we have currently, and I wanted to ask you about this, even in the classified world, and is there a possibility that most of what we think are abductions may not be what we think they are? That they could be the government playing a game on the American public, like I think Leah Haley stated in some of the interviews that she's done before, that they're using the abduction phenomenon to use people for experimental purposes. Is there a possibility in your mind, and you've researched this for many years now, Joe, that there could be a logical explanation for what may be occurring to these poor people who are being abducted?
Well, I would say it's a possibility for a chunk of the ones that are being abducted. That's why we actually have the military abductions. And we're sure they're for several different reasons. Melinda Leslie makes a point that they're reverse engineering contactees, ones that have had major contact. Not your everyday contactee, but your more advanced ones like Katarina Wilson and some of the other ones who have had major contact, that actually have major amounts of information. Not to say that all their information is right, because a lot of it's not, but they said, you know, those. But there are times when you can see that like what I was saying with the Betty and Barney Hill case, that they don't fit into the abduction criteria. The ones that don't fit into the abduction criteria, you got to look at closely. First, you got to determine whether they're lying or not. Did this person actually have an experience, or are they just actually full of it? Because, you know, we get cases that, like, child molestation will manifest as an alien abduction. Spousal abuse, things like that, will manifest as an alien abduction. For some reason or another, some people that have these kind of problems will turn this into an alien abduction, when in fact, they were never abducted. But then there's cases where the person has had something physically real happen to them, but it was not alien-related. And sometimes we can't even find a genetic line, meaning that we can't find any contactees in that family line. One of the things that dictates a true alien abductee is that this has been going on in their family line for generations. That's what most people who research this field don't understand. A true contactee, you like a lot of our cases, go back 6 and 7 generations. I got at least a dozen cases that are 5 to 8 generations that we've actually... Some of these cases, at least 3 of them, I have had on record for 25 years. I have tracked great-great-great-grandmother, great-grandmother, grandmother, daughter, granddaughter, great-granddaughter, and great-great-granddaughter. That's 7 generations that we've been able to track in one family. And they're all contactees. And the things that happen to them are different, and some are similar, some are different, but... You know, we have these cases, and we actually have a couple of cases that, you know, we have a lot of cases that are 3 and 4 generations. We've even got a couple of cases where we've got diaries that date back 100-plus years in the family. So they're going back 10 generations. So the thing about it is there's a way to distinguish between what is actually a military abductee and what is actually an alien abduction. Some technologies the government just does not possess. Advanced mind control is not something our government possesses. I know we all like to think they do, but it's a real easy way of knowing this. The simple fact that we let Iran and North Korea do what the hell they want proves right there that the Americas does not have advanced mind control. The fact that we let Russia invade Georgia, the fact that we let China do whatever the hell it wants, proves that the United States does not possess advanced mind control, because we would not tolerate this crap if we actually had the ability to go in and make people do what we wanted at their whim without having to take them, probe them, lock them down, and do 5 million things to them. So, you know, this pretty much proves that we're limited in what we can do. And knowing what we know about the MILABs have what they call passive scanning, where they bring in like a psychic that actually passively scans the individual to open their mind to be conditioned for new memories. And then they do put a memory cap in. These things that you can find inside of in a military inductee with the right hip, with the right therapist, I don't mean hypnotherapist, but the right therapist and the right questions, you can find these memory casts. Aliens don't use memory casts. Aliens use what we call looped memories, where they actually physically take a real memory and replay it in your head. They'll take like two of them and put them together and they'll replay it in your head, and as far as you're concerned, nothing happened. That's why we're almost positive that 99% of all abductees will never even know they were abducted, because it is almost seamless. Plus, there's hardly any missing. By the way, ICAR broke the non-missing time thing about 15 years ago, where we started seeing gain time and even time and almost the end of missing time, because the aliens had gotten very sophisticated and realized that we were tracking people through missing time. So now what they do is they just physically take you out of the timeline and then put you back. That is not a technology that our government possesses. So that's what I'm saying. So you can distinguish between what's an alien abduction. That's why we have abduction criteria and military abduction criteria. You can distinguish between the two now. We've got enough research to know what is real. Oh, well, I shouldn't say what's real, but what's an alien abduction and what's a military abduction, and there's some gray areas in between. And I do believe that, I don't want to say our government, by the way, I do believe there is parties that be that work outside of the normal government that do experiments, both on contactees and on everyday people. I have no doubt in my mind that they're doing these things. But I don't really think they're part of the... I used to say they're not part of the Bush government. Now I'm going to say they're not part of the Obama government. Because personally, I don't think Obama knows squat about extraterrestrials or military abductions. I really don't think he does. Plausible deniability is probably why. So I don't think he does, and I don't think most congressmen or senators know. I really don't think they know. But I do think there are a group of people out there that do know, and that they do work this, and they do work this outside of the law and outside of our government, and they're very well-funded, and they're very well-organized, and they have some outstanding technologies, probably much better than what the everyday military person is using, but it's still not quite as good as the grays. The grays seem to, you know, the grays can take you in your damn car while you're driving down the highway. And they take car and everything and then put you right back where they left you off. That's just beyond our government technologies at the time. Probably will be beyond our government technologies for another 1,000 years or so. So, you know, that's why I said when they were telling me about Betty and Barney Hill. Betty and Barney Hill, and this is the kicker for anybody who's ever heard about this case, by the way, this is important. Betty and Barney Hill does not fit in to any abduction case that has ever happened. Okay, they don't fit into the grays, they don't fit into the reptilians, they don't fit into the humans, they don't even fit into the one-time abductee cases, okay? What they fit into is the military abduction case, and if you ask anybody who does, and you will call Attorney Kaymore since he's deceased, but you ask anybody who does military abductions, that's what they'll tell you, that they fit into that case. That's the criteria that meets the Betty and Barney Hill case, is the military abduction, not the alien abduction. So, you know, it's important to establish these guidelines, because without them, we don't know who's telling the truth, we don't know who's not. Without guidelines, we can't get anywhere, we can't get any real information out of anything. You know, we have to set up things so we know what, you know, this group for the Uncle Sam might be doing, what the aliens might be doing, so on and so forth. You know, these are things that are important to establish. Most ICAR members, all ICAR directors, are very well versed in several of the abduction criteria. No one but maybe three of us know them all. Hell, I don't even think three of us know them all. Hell, for that matter, I don't think I know them all. But most of us are very well versed in it. And I can tell you this, I know most of the staff that works for me, I can't speak for everybody else, but most of the staff that works for me, which is about 50 people right now that work for me on a regular basis, they could tell if a contactee's lying or telling the truth within about 8 questions. And they could tell within 20 questions if they were alien abductions or military abductions. And that is truly the difference between an organization like MUFON or KUFOS or any of the other ones and us. We are actually very well versed in alien abductions. We don't say that we're UFO an organization. We say we're an alien abduction organization. And we don't believe that certain things are going to happen as far as disclosure goes. And, you know, I'm a big advocate and I'm a big supporter of exopolitics, but I don't always agree with exopolitics because, frankly, until we address the contactees, making contact with ET is a waste of damn time. Until we got an idea, what are they doing here, what do they want, and what may be the consequences, it's a waste of time. So I do endorse their efforts, and I back and endorse Stephen Bessette and his advocacy program 100% because I would like to see the government disclose. But I have to be honest. When it comes right down to it, until we put the contactee into this, it's a waste of time. Now, by saying that, I got to say, I was very surprised by Stephen Bessette this year. He invited us down to speak at the conference about alien abductions. He's actually started to include alien abductions in what he considers to be alien exopolitics. I have also seen Michael Sala and Alfred Weber start to include it this year as well. So, long term, there may be some hope. Short term, not so much. Long term, there might be. But anyway, I've been rambling on. Let me drink my coffee.
Well, one thing I want to bring up, you know, we have a mutual friend, Guy Malone, who talks about alien abductions being demonic instead of extraterrestrial. Yep. And what are your thoughts on that particular issue?
You know, I actually went on Guy's show live from Roswell. We discussed this. And he did admit at the end of the show that there was enough evidence to say suggest that some of this might actually be extraterrestrial. I kept that show in case he ever backslided, by the way. But I'm not going to say that there's no such thing as demonic possession, because I really don't know. I'm not a paranormal expert. I do have a lot of friends that work in the field, because I own a paranormal radio network. Like the Haunted Mortuary in New Orleans, we're getting ready to do a live 8-hour broadcast from the Haunted Mortuary. We're going to use all our cameras, put it on, and do the whole nine yards. But for me personally, to say that an alien abductee is demonically possessed is a moronic statement. That's why Joe Jordan hates me so much, because he is a moron, okay, a moron. Joe, I hope you're listening, you moron. Anybody who believes that all alien abductions or demonic possession should seek professional counseling, okay, that's all I can tell you. It would be the same thing as saying, you know, that all accidents are caused by the same individual. It's just a moronic statement. We don't know enough to suggest, you know, how many of these are military, how many of these are aliens, how many of these may be something else, how many of these may be some kind of loose hallucination, how many of these may just be someone screwed up in the head, and how many of these may be demonic possession. We don't know. But for anybody to just flat out cancel out alien abduction, that's just moronic. You know, and I've told Joe Jordan this before, and I'm going to make this short. Why in the hell would the Creator first and foremost only create us? We are a really screwed up race, so I would think he might have made stuff before and after us, or she or it, or whatever you want to say. So I have a hard time personally thinking that we're the only thing in this big, vast, beautiful universe that we live in. And for anyone to say that we're the only thing, really, that's a moronic statement. It really simply is. And now with current science, let's be honest, both NASA and the European Space Agency says they think they're going to find life on Mars, on Europa, on Io, and at least four or five other planetary or planetoids in our solar system. They have no doubt. They're pretty sure they found the signs of life on Mars. Now, I'm not talking intelligent life, mind you, but still life. Now, there's about 100-and-something bodies in our solar system. I think it's 140 or something. If you find 10 or 15 out of 140 that have life on it, and you times that times the 200 billion stars in our galaxy, that's almost a trillion worlds with life, which means at least 100 billion have intelligent life. So, I mean, we got to be real careful when we're saying that we're the only thing in the universe. That's just a moronic statement. I mean, these people really need to go back and educate themselves. You know, and to the person just eyeing me, well, you don't believe in God. I don't believe in your God. Let's clarify. Okay, I, it's not that I don't believe in a supreme being. I do think there's something out there that dictates how the universe works, regardless of what it is. I just don't think that it says that, you know, this is it, this is how it's going to be, and we're the only thing in the universe. I think that is a belief of man to put himself before everything else, because we have big egos. We need to think we're important. That's why when contactees tell me it's about them, I'm like, well, you're probably not a contactee then. Because aliens are abducting us for their benefit, not for our benefit. This is about them. We are part of the abduction. We're not even the whole part of the abduction. We are just part of the abduction. So, and that's another ego thing. We have to make it about us. And that's what the God thing is. We have to make it about us. We most people feel too small and too insignificant without having God. And think about this, and this is, I, you know, this irritates me every time I think about this. More people have fought and died in the name of God than any other thing on the planet. Anything on the planet. Remember, Hitler's told that the angels told him to do what he did. 53 million did because the angels told him what to do. All right? More people have died in the name of God than anything else on the planet. I just cannot believe that a supreme being would allow that crap to go on in his name. So I got to take issue with that. That's why I don't think, I really think, I got to be honest with you, I really think about 80% of what we consider to be God is going to turn out to be extraterrestrial. I really truly think that at least 80% of what we consider to be God is going to turn out to be E.T. Not all of it, but a good chunk of it.
Well, let me interject something here, Joe, if you don't mind. I am a Christian. I do believe in God and Jesus and all. But I do agree with you on one particular aspect that you're bringing in. God is a creator. That's what he does.
Yep.
He created the angels, even the fallen angels, which were the devil and his minions, were created by God himself. He created this universe. And to believe that we are the only life forms that were created, to me, is preposterous. It's not, it doesn't even make logical sense. If a creator creates, then why would we be the only ones that he has created?
That's a good point. Well, I got a preacher friend of mine. He gets in trouble for this all the time, by the way. He said, have you ever noticed that God hasn't done anything new in 2,000 years, meaning that he hasn't, you know, come down, you know, burning bush or any of that stuff is what he's talking about. He said, does anyone ever stop to think that he got bored with us and went on and created a new race, and that's where he's at now or she's at now? It's an irritating point, but it's a very good one. I mean, you have to remember, man's only been on the planet for 1 million years. That's it. The universe itself is 14 billion years old. So if he creates a new life form every 1 million years, do you have any life forms he's created? It's, you know, how many are before us and how many are going to be after us? It's one of those things you have to kind of stop and go, well, you know, it's a good point. It may not be true, but it's a good point. And it's one of those things you have to stop and wonder. But it always freaks me out a little bit. And I was raised Catholic. I was raised very Catholic, to be honest with you. And then I was converted to Baptist later on. It's just I learned that, you know, not everything is what we believe. And I learned a lot of what we consider to be religion was written by man for the control of man, and nothing more than that. So knowing that, you know, changes the whole belief system for me. And I've said this 100 times, you do not need to have religion to be spiritual. There is a difference between spirituality and religion. And I think that's something that most people on this planet need to learn. There's a big difference between being spiritual and being religious. And what people like Joe Jordan and them are talking about, they're talking about religion. They're not talking about spirituality. They're not talking about God in its spiritual form. They're talking about God in its religious form, which was created by man for the control of man. And that's really what they seem like they're doing to me, is they're trying to scare people into what they want the people to do. Which I just think is just absolute total BS. But, you know, that's my own personal opinion, by the way. That is not the opinion of the I-Corps organization, before y'all start sending me emails.
Well, here's another thing I want to bring up before we close tonight. I mean, the Avenger in the chat room said, well, God would be an ET by definition. That's correct. But, you know, he's beyond that. He's a multidimensional being. And that, to me, shows how he can be omnipresent anywhere and everywhere in one time, which by its definition would not be human.
Well, that's true.
It would be a form of intelligent energy.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because Ezekiel, which is classic abduction, and most people think Ezekiel were written by the old, were in the Old Testament or in the Christian, but Ezekiel actually comes from a Sumerian. As a matter of fact, quite a lot of stuff in the Bible comes from the Sumerians, including the Great Flood. This was all stuff written 3,000 years before the Bible was even conceived, and most humans don't know that because they haven't taken the time to educate themselves on it. That's how you know the Bible wasn't written by God, and you knew it was written by man, because God wouldn't have made those mistakes, because because he would have been all-seeing, all-knowing. Or she or it would have been all-seeing, all-knowing. So there wouldn't have been any mistakes in the Bible. And there are several mistakes in the Bible. So that suggests that that was written by man for the control of man. It does not negate the fact that there may be a supreme being out there that created this planet or even created us for that matter. But it does negate the fact that God wrote the Bible. It proves that man. But the point I'm making is Ezekiel is classic alien abduction. Now, here's another one for you. I got a contactee who calls me up, right? They were out with their friends out in the Gobi Desert. She went missing for 30 days, came back pregnant, swears that she never, ever seen any men, but seen this light hovering in the sky that embraced her and took her up, and she came back pregnant. Now, this is an alien abduction, but it is the same story that Mary talks about in the Bible. The story of Mary is classic alien abduction. And I mean classic alien abduction. So, I mean, really and truly, do we really know what was said? Is that really the truth? None of us were there. So, anyway, it goes for me. I believe Jesus lived and died just the way he said he did, and I believe Jesus actually had special abilities. But was it because he was the Son of God, or was it because he was the son of E.T.? That's the question that needs to be answered. And since none of us were there, none of us will find out until we kick the bucket, it is a tough, tough question. That's why I said I think that a lot of what we're going to find in the Christian Bible and in a lot of the other religious texts, for that matter, are going to turn out to be extraterrestrial. And because let's be honest, if I took a spaceship and traveled back 3,000 years and I hovered over there and I shot my little beam down and pushed the water up, pushed all the fish on the beach, and then I put my little hover thing down and walked over the water, and then I came up with my little wand thingy and cured the sick. The only way they could look at me is a god, when in fact I was just a man who was traveling to a less advanced planet. Even in today's society, even in as advanced as we are today, some of the alien technology can only be considered like magic to us because we simply do not understand it. Now, we know they're not gods now. But 2,000 years ago, the only way we could have viewed them was as gods. So that's where this gets real sticky, because knowing the mentality of the people at the time and knowing what was going on at the time, a lot of what we consider to be God may simply be extraterrestrial. And that always bothers me, because then a lot of what I personally believed growing up was a lie, which just, by the way, hacks me off. It doesn't negate my belief in the universe or in a supreme spiritual being, by the way. And it doesn't negate the fact that the person we're talking about, Jesus Christ, was somebody significant in our timeline. What it does not tell us either way is if he was the son of God or if he was the son of an extraterrestrial. And that is what's truly important. Or it may not even matter, because what he did is what he did. So does it really truly matter who he was? More or less, does it matter more that it was the actions of his time that made the difference? So that can be argued in several different ways. So I kind of try to stay out of that. But, you know, it's one of those things. And when I talk to this, and I've said this in front of churches and spiritual gatherings before, matter of fact, it's one of the reasons that there are 14 pastors and preachers that are ICAR members, is because of what I just said. Because even they had to stop and say, oh, wait a minute now. That actually makes damn sense. It doesn't negate their belief, by the way. They still preach every weekend like they always do. But it did make them stop and think that there may be more to what we were told than what we were actually told. And we know it from just doing our regular Bible studies that there was a lot of stuff that didn't make it into the Bible, and a lot of stuff that was written 100, 150 years after it was actually said. And then there's the most important part of this, okay? Nothing was written in Christ's hand in Aramaic at the time he was alive. So what we have here is the Son of God who decided that it was not important enough to write this down. Matter of fact, the only thing written in Aramaic at the time of Christ was the St. Thomas Epistles, and it is actually contradictory to the Christian Bible. So who's right here and who's wrong? Was it the preachers that were right, or was it the St. Thomas Epistles that were right? Because it's an entirely different thing. So, you know, it's all comes down to belief, is what it comes down to. What do you personally believe in? And how much have you researched what was being told to you, and how much of the research that you were being told is actually true? It's a tough one. See, I got an advantage because I used to teach Sunday school 30 years ago. So I'm actually quite well-versed in both the New and the Old Testament and most of the religious stuff that goes along with it. And that's why when people want to argue religion with me, I'm like, well, wait a minute now. You better just back on up here because I really know my stuff. Plus, my wife was a Pentecostal for 26 years. You can't get much stricter than they are. No TV, no, couldn't even cut your hair, couldn't wear pants, couldn't do none of that stuff. So I do understand, and I do understand the need to have a God. I understand man's need to have a God. And like myself, I understand the need that I have to have a supreme spiritual being just to keep me moving. But let's be honest about this once again. If you need to have a God to be moral, then you need to seek professional help. You should not have to be a religious person to do the right thing, is what I'm saying. You should be able to do the right thing without being a religious person. And I know that's tough for some people, by the way. But, you know, get a friend. Get them to help you. But don't rule out spirituality. And that's all I wanted to say about that. Don't rule out spirituality. Keep it in your heart. Keep it in your head. Keep it wherever you think you need to keep it.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask you real quickly, though, you have kind of a complete worldview, dealing with the alien abduction phenomenon and all. Do you think that eventually that certain powers that be may use this particular phenomenon as well as others to bring forth a one-world unified government under the fear of an alien attack is what I'm thinking right now.
You know, I don't want to say yes to that, even though I do personally believe it is a possibility. I will not rule out that our government or the UN will use this to pull the world into the direction they need to. I'm not, you know, it is within the realm of possibility that they stage an alien attack so that they can unite the planet under one banner. I'm not going to rule that out, or at least unite a good chunk of the planet under one banner. I'm hoping it doesn't happen. I'm hoping it's something that never gets used. But when we reach a certain technological level, where when our governments are 150, 200 years ahead of the general population, it is well within their ability to do such a thing. So I'm not going to rule it out, Paul. I don't want to think that they're going to do this. But, you know, there's a lot of talk about one world government these days. And, you know, there's Reagan's 6 speeches when he said about an alien invasion would pull the world together. And so I can't rule it out. All I can say is I hope the people of Earth are smart enough to know the difference between the two and do something about it. Whether or not we can, we'll have to wait and see. And see, that's what's always bothered me, because I was talking with some of my exopolitical friends in D.C. about this. You know, they were setting up ambassador ships and we're going to talk with the aliens. And I got to thinking, how do we know that it won't be the government acting like aliens? It's a tough one. And I'm not going to rule out that they won't do these things, because, frankly, our government, or the government powers to be, have done some rather scary things in the 46 years that I've been alive on the planet and not told us about them. I mean, recently I was watching something, I'm amazed or something, and they were talking about government projects that have recently just been declassified. The government has done some horrific stuff, guys, and not even bothered telling us anything about it till 60 or 70 years later. So I'm not going to rule it out. Right now I would think it was probably, if I had to put it in percentages, I think it's about a 30% chance that they're going to do it. But in saying that, it doesn't mean that could go up to 50% or 80% tomorrow. I think right now, because of the current environment, that it would be very, very, very risky and could end up throwing the world into a major, major catastrophe if it wasn't handled right. But that's not to say 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, 20 years down the line, that they won't do it. You know, because recently, and I hate to admit to this, but recently I have realized that most of our politicians really effectively don't have much in the way of power. You know, Obama's a nice guy and all, but his hands are kind of tied in what he can really do and what he can't really. It's not that he can't affect some things, he can. But in general, he's not, and he's not all that much different than Bush. Like a friend of mine, Richard Dolan, told me in an interview. Richard's a big supporter of Obama, but just recently we were doing an interview, and he called him Bush Light, which is I thought was kind of funny. But he is Bush Light. Okay? He really is Bush Light. He's doing a lot of the same crap that Bush did. And I think in all fairness to Obama, I don't think Obama had the full picture until he got in office. You know, he was doing all his criticism. You notice he doesn't criticize Bush anymore. And that's because he's got into the presidency and realized, you know, oh, wait a minute, this is not what the hell I thought this was going to be. He thought he was going to be the almighty and turned out to be that he's not. And so I think that, you know, our politicians can affect some change, but I think they're limited. And I think there's other powers to be involved here. What I'm trying to say is I don't think the outward government would ever do this, but the government that actually puts pressure on our politicians and presidents and stuff, they might. So we're going to have to wait and see. We need to be vigilant is what I'm saying.
Don't fear the politicians, fear the puppet masters.
That's right. That's a good point. Don't fear the politicians, fear the puppet masters, because whoever's doing this behind the scenes, because let's be honest, Obama don't want a one-world government. And Obama don't want a lot of things that's being pushed right now. He personally could care less, but, you know, there are agendas at hand. And it's funny because here, I'm going to say this real quick, but I was watching CNN today. So in Europe, Obama has like a 64% approval rate. You know, when Bush was president, we had like a 31, now there's a 64 in Europe. I was like, wow, he's making us look good in Europe. Well, in Russia and China, he's down to 16%. Well, he went and made that speech in the Middle East, right? Before he made the speech in the Middle East, we had about a 38% approval rating. After the speech, we went down to a 16% approval rating. So in Europe, he made America look better. But in other parts of the world, including South America, the Middle East, and in the Asian and Russian areas, he made us look worse. So you got to kind of wonder about it. It's like I heard North Korea and Iran call Hillary a moron. The guy from North Korea actually called Hillary a moron, and the guy from Iran pretty much said the same thing. You ever notice they never said that to Condoleezza Rice? Did y'all notice that? Because mm-hmm. Condi would have kicked their ass back to the Stone Age. That's the difference. And they knew that. So, you know, it's all about who's scratching whose ass and who's doing what. And it's for us as everyday people, it sucks, because we're the ones that get kicked. You know, we're the ones without health care. We're the ones that aren't getting good wages. We're the ones that's got to deal with all kind of bullshit. So we're the ones in the end that gets kicked, not them. Oh, he already is, Avenger. Actually, at the same date, when Bush's first 8 months, Bush had a 58% approval rate, and Obama has a 57% approval rate. He's already a point below it. And one of his other approval ratings is already below 50%. On health care, it's 47%. So... it's a shame, and I really hated on Obama in the beginning, but you know what? I actually kind of feel sorry for the guy. Now, he pissed me off the other day when he said those police officers were stupid. He called the cop, by the way, I shouldn't even get into this, but he called these police officers stupid, and then he called the cop. The President of the United States should not call a cop over some stupid thing like that. I mean, what is this guy, an idiot? Lord, I just can't believe he did that. Come to find out, the professor is a friend of Obama. But now everybody in the police departments and the unions are asking Obama to apologize, because even the black officer that was with him said they did the right thing. So Obama was out of line there. He's a rock star. He's not a president, guys. That's what he is. He's a rock star, which is cool. You know, I mean, that's fine as long as somebody's running the country. But so you got a rock star, Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton. We're in deep shit. That's all I can say. But, you know, come on, before we had Bush and Cheney, what can you say? So that, and then before that, we had Clinton and Gore. I mean, we've pretty much been in deep shit since about 1970. I don't know, guys. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't seem to be any real politicians anymore. It seems to be button pushers. Anyway, enough about that.
Well, the one thing I want to bring up to you and go back to the original subject, dealing with the possible scenario of using the extraterrestrial phenomenon as a preemptive reason to create a one-world government. Let's go back to 1939. And Orson Welles did the War of the Worlds broadcast. Now, The particular thing about that that a lot of people do not know is that that was an experimental PSYOPS project that was funded by the Rockefeller Foundation. And they wanted to see what would happen if the American populace believed that we were about to be invaded by alien beings. And think about what happened back then. Wait. Now, I know you know about the scenario, Joe.
Yeah, I do. And I've actually read about it. You know, the first time I ever heard of Orson, I got the original broadcast, by the way. It airs on the station from time to time. And which I still like to listen to. There was a friend of mine I was talking to when I was in the Navy. He was actually the one that told me about that. He was a captain. And he was telling me that it was an experimental project. And I told him at the time, I said, man, you're full of crap. It was Orson Welles. He did it, and everybody panicked. The thing about it is, it does prove a point. Granted, no radio show today is going to make a bunch of people panic. But if it was done on television, and it was done correctly, and it was broadcast over all the networks at the same time, oh yeah, people would panic, and in a major way. In a major, major way, they would panic. And it's a shame to say that, but they would. And, you know, I noticed with the news media today, you know, they're pretty much bought and owned by the government because they're either pro one government or pro the other government. There doesn't seem to be any bipartisanship or any middlemen anymore. CNN is so far up Obama's butt, they're lucky they can see daylight. And Fox is so far out of his butt, they're lucky they can even see the president. So that, I think, is going to be the hardest part, though, Paul, for any of this to ever work. We're going to have to bring our politics, not just our politics, by the way, but the world's politics will have to be a little bit more to the middle. Right now, you have too many people too far left and too far right for this to really work. Because there are going to be people in there that are not going to keep the secret. But if you can bring the government just a little bit closer together and get everybody a little bit more in the middle, it's a doable project. It really is. I was talking with a friend of mine in Roswell about 2 years ago about this very thing when we were up there for the 60th anniversary. We were actually talking about how could you portray a hoax that would get the whole world involved. Well, if you could access the satellite feeds around the world, and all you got to access is 7 major satellites, which isn't that big of a deal to take over satellites. If you've got good computer equipment and some really good hackers and some really good graphic art designers, you know, this could be done, and it could be done quickly, and everybody would be panicked and screaming and all over with before any of us really knew what was going on. And if you planted a couple of thermonuclear weapons in a couple of cities, and then said the aliens, you know, showed the aliens on TV hitting the city, and then of course detonating the bombs and wiping out the city, well, of course we all would think. It would take 50 years to unravel this, and by then it would be too late. We'd be under one government. And I got to tell you, I'm not so much scared about one government. It just depends what kind of government it is. If it's a democratic government, screw it. I think one government's good. If it's a communist, no, screw that idea. If it's something in between, I'd have to see how it turned out. Somebody asked me the other day if I'm against one world government. I'm really not. I mean, if we can have a one world democratic government, or let me rephrase it. If we can have a one world fake democratic government like our government is today, where we don't have control, but they give us freedom, okay? Because we really, as people, don't have any control of what goes on, but we still have the freedom to eat, drink, smoke, drive, go wherever we want without any harassment. If they can offer that and still keep their control, I would go for that. I wouldn't have a problem with it. I really wouldn't. I don't see where it would hurt humanity. But now, if we're going to go ahead and enslave the race, oh, screw that. And one thing I learned, if you watch history, and I don't know why anybody would try this, but if you watch history, you can only enslave people for so long, and then sooner or later, they're going to rebel. And it's a lesson that everyone in every major position should have already learned. You can only keep the people down for so long, and then they don't have nothing to lose. Once they don't have anything to lose, they're going to rebel. If it doesn't matter if they live or die, then it doesn't matter. And why work for the man if you're going to die anyway? You know, so I'm really thinking that one world order is going to be much different than we all originally thought it was. I think it's going to be a little bit more like the government we have today. But yet, kind of a cross between the government we have today. If you've been watching, the United States government's kind of moving into a big brother thing. You know, we got cameras on the stoplights, cameras here, cameras there, cameras up your butt, cameras up your, you know, cameras up the wazoo. They're all over the place. You know, they want to put tracking chips in us. We already got GPS in our cars, GPS in our telephones. So, in fact, Big Brother is watching us, and they're watching us pretty good, actually. If you own a cell phone or a car made after 2004, they know where you are. So it's not a big deal. So I personally don't have problems with that. It's just I think we still need to keep certain freedoms. And as long as we can keep that, see, that's what the government understands already. If you keep the people happy and still keep you control, it's a good way to do it. And we'll have to wait and see how that all goes down, because if it goes down until we're going to, you know, hold everybody down, then of course it's going to be a much different thing than we want it to be.
Well, one of the things I'm concerned about, first of all, I hope you don't mind me openly disagreeing with one particular
point you said
earlier, Joe, in regards to technology. I happen to be an expert in certain particular areas of technology, dealing with points, dealing with classified technologies, even some that are claimed to be derivatives from research into crashed alien vehicles. And we're talking the quote-unquote anti-gravity technologies as well as others. We have the ability right now to travel to the stars. Ben Rich, who was the former head of Lockheed Martin Skunk Works, made that statement in a speech he made. We could reach to the stars.
Oh, yeah, Keith Reed.
It would take an act of God to be able to bring out that technology so that the public can be able to use it, is what he said. And I'm kind of paraphrasing that. However, the point I'm making about it is we have technologies right now where we can mimic an alien attack. We've even done genetic technologies to where we can genetically engineer quote-unquote human beings to look like alien or aliens. And the reason why I bring that up is, like, let's say one day we get invaded quote-unquote by alien beings. Now, this can also play into the abduction phenomenon as well, and the MILLAB phenomenon, because there were a lot of, pardon me, military abductions, or people who were abducted that stated that they saw Army personnel next to the aliens who were abducting them. Classic military abduction. And they were using false memory engrams that they can use through microwave transmission techniques. And I know, and I know Dr. John Alexander well. He's the head of the non-lethal weapons program. They have those abilities, and even he admits that they have perfected them. They can do that and be able to transmit thoughts or thought imprints into the mind. Being that they have these technologies, it would not be a far stretch to believe that they could not fake an alien invasion scenario, and using these particular, like, 3D holograms and such, be able to use that to fake people out and to get them to believe a big lie, to where they would give away their sovereignty in exchange for protection against the so-called alien invaders. And this is what I'm concerned about. I mean, I have no issue, per se, with individuals or with the alien abduction phenomenon, whether it be real or not, because I've had a near abduction experience myself as well. But being that that's the case, and I know for a fact, because I do research in the field of anti-gravity technology, I've written a paper on it and such, I believe, at least in my opinion, that it's very likely that they could use that technology to be able to shock people in such a way that they would give away their rights in order to be protected from a menace that they do not understand.
Well, no, I agree. I mean, the Black Triangles, we've been filming them for years. I have no doubt that we've been possessing spaceflight technology for a decade or more. That's not the problem. The problem is people like me and you and others. You're not going to fool me with a fake invasion. And I have a radio station that goes out to 3.8 million weekly listeners, so you're not going to be able to fool me like that. And there's a lot of people you're not going to be able to fool, because we know what E.T. looks like. We know what to expect from E.T. And, you know, the longer they wait, the harder this is going to get. Because the more they let people like myself and others speak about this on a regular basis, the less likely that people are going to fall for the BS. So if they're going to do it, they're going to have to do it soon. Because really and truly, if they let people like myself and a bunch of others keep talking about this, it's going to be ineffective. The population will be severely, educated enough that they're not going to buy it. And the Black Triangles, the TR-3Bs, are common. Even everyday people have heard about the Black Triangles. So if the government shows up with TRs flying over, people are going to go, oh, no, that's the government. They're not going to think it's aliens. They're going to think it's the government. See, the government may have waited too long, actually, to do this. If you want to make the people think this is aliens, you're going to have to show up with little short grays and silver saucers, and the grays are not going to tolerate that. They're not going to let us do that. They're going to be like, oh, screw you, buddy. We ain't going to let you do that. So the government's in a precarious situation. If E.T.'s not real at all, then they have a shot. But if E.T.'s not real at all, then they don't possess these kind of technologies. So it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. So if they're going to fool the people, they're going to have to do it soon. Like I said, the longer they wait, the less likely they're going to be able to. And then, you know, besides people like myself, you have astronauts and pilots and other people that are very well versed in this stuff now. So it's going to be way harder to pull the wool over their eyes. It really is. Maybe, you know, second world countries, third world countries, it might be easier, but Europe, the United States, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a hard sell. So they may have already exceeded their chances of what they can actually get away with. Now, if they could figure out, if they could have ever got the ELF program to work, they might have had a chance. Or even the ELF heart program, they might have had a chance. But they've never been able to get it to do what they wanted it to do, to be able to give everyone at one time this sense of euphoric so they could do what they want. They haven't been able to do that yet. Unfortunately, our technology just has not reached that situation. And then there seems to be, for any one technology, there always seems to be people that are, well, immune to it. I've noticed with the government, especially in military abductions, probably one in every 30 military abductees seem to be immune to the way what they use to brainwash them with. So it's getting to the point that really, if they were going to do this, they should have done this 40 years ago. They should have done it with Orson Welles, or they should have done it with Betty and Barney Hill. But the longer they wait, the harder it's going to be to get this to be convincing. Like I said, most Americans are quite aware of the Aurora programs, the Clipper B programs, the TR-3B programs. These are programs that our government are aware of, and thanks to the F-117, most Americans are very well educated in the fact that the government never tells us what they have until they have to break it out. I mean, let's be honest. The F-117 flew in 1979. When was it released to the general public? Well, in Desert Storm in 1990. Now, there was talk about it, and we had said we were working on them, but we had never said we had an active squadron that had been flying for almost 10 years. And no one even admitted that the SR-71 was stealth until just 10 years ago. And this is a 50-year-old airplane. They didn't even want to admit to how fast this thing went until just recently. So the government has put themselves in a position where people are just not going to buy it outright anymore. In the 50s, when UFOs were prevalent all over the place, and they were running experiments on how they could do this in the 50s, people would have bought this hook, line, and sinker. But in the year 2009, they're not going to buy a hook, line, and sinker. And that is going to be where the problem end lies. You'll end up having a revolution is what you'll end up having. So they won't be able to achieve their actual goals. I'm not really sure at this point if they're going to be able to do this or not. It's a tough one, Paul. It really is. And it's going to really have a lot to do with, you know, what's going on, how can they do this, things along those lines. It's going to be tough, man. It's going to be tough. But I know we done ran over like 27 minutes now. But it's going to be tough. I've been enjoying this. But it's going to be a hard tough. Like I said, I ain't going to rule it out, though, Paul. I'm not going to rule anything out. But I don't think countries like Russia and China possess the level of technology we have. And, you know, so it's going to be hard. In order for this to pull off, first off, we'd have to bring everybody in the world up to speed, the other countries, because it'd have to be done as a uniform group effort. And we're not going to give those countries like China this kind of technology. We're just not. We don't trust them enough to give them this kind of technology, and we're just not. We can't trust the fact that they might not turn around and use it against us. This is another point, by the way. This is why the moon landings could have never been hoaxed, because Russia and China would have never lied to the United States, ever. And Russia and China both tracked the lunar landers all the way to the surface of the moon. Now, recently, spy satellites have taken pictures of the landers so they can rule out the fact that they're not there anymore. But this was always a sore spot for me and the people that said the moon landings were hoaxed. Russia would not have lied to the United States, and neither would have China. You know, and I think most people didn't realize to how many people were tracking these craft. You had 61 countries tracking the lunar landers. 61 countries. There is no way that all these people were going to lie. There's just no way. So that was an important thing. And now that they've actually taken pictures of the landers, you know, they've got pictures of three different landers. And not just the United States, by the way. Japan has taken pictures of it. Russia has taken pictures of it. And now China has taken pictures of the landers. So they're not gonna just lie for us like that. Let's be honest. Russia still hates us, and they're a democratic nation now, and they still hate us. So if they could lie, if they could get it out on us, they would. They just can't. There was nothing there for them to do it. And to be honest with you, none of the technologies involved in going to the moon were all that very fantastic. Most kids could figure out how to get there and get back. The hardest part was building the rocket to get you into damn space. None of the other technologies were even that great. And everybody tells me about the Van Allen belt. Jesus Christ, we got a space station, been in space for a decade, and the Skylab was up there for longer than that, and so was the other one. And it didn't kill those astronauts. As a matter of fact, they're still alive and kicking today. So, you know, there's certain things we can rule out now that the conspiracists like to use. And I do understand. I mean, you know, when I first seen those pictures of the lander with the three shadows, I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Why we got three shadows? You know, we got moonlight, we got earthlight. Where'd the third shadow come from? It came from the lander lights. That's why it was three shadows. You had the moonlight, the sunlight, and the lander light. Made perfect sense after that. But most people did not want to stop and actually look at that. They would rather take the stuff that's going on. Because I was really pissed when I seen that third shadow. I was thinking, oh, these SOBs screwed us and I'm hot. But then I realized that, first off, there were 61 countries tracking these, so they weren't going to lie. And then I understood where the other light source came from, so it was a pretty easy give me for them. But, you know, I don't trust our governments at all. It's not beyond lying to us. It's not beyond using us for their own means. I don't think they're above any of that stuff, and not just the American government, by the way. I believe most governments are not beyond doing this to their people. I just think if it's to the government's advantage, I think they'll do it. I just personally think that. But I do think the government does some stuff for our own, you know, to keep us interested, to keep us appealing, and to keep us giving them power. You know, the people at B want to keep their power. They don't want a revolution, so in order to keep their power, every now and then they throw us a bone, for a lack of a better way of saying it. You know, it's one of those things. But who knows? Hopefully me and you will be along for another 30 years of debate. Now, if the aliens come or the government comes, Paul, we might not be able to do this anymore.
Well, Joe, one other thing I wanted to bring up to you, just to clarify with the guests in the chat room as well as the guests who are listening live.
Yeah.
Can you tell them and explain to them some of these technologies that you have, which I already know and I know already what they are, but some of them may be going, tier three, what?
Oh.
You know, and they may be questioning, what is it that Joe is talking about?
Well,
could you go ahead and focus on
that? The TRs are a hybrid version. Originally, they were going to be like an Aurora with some kind of RAM scoop or propulsion, but come to find out, and y'all, you know, when we use the words magnetic drive or gravity drive, by the way, we're using these very loosely, okay? It's probably not what they actually are. The TRs have been filmed, and this is how we know they're government, by the way. The TRs have been filmed in the training areas near Eglin Air Force Base, near in Nevada, in California, all the places that the X-117s used to be seen when they were being said they were UFOs. I mean, I think there were 700 reports of X-117s as UFOs. Of course, we found out that they were X-117s. Well, the TR-3Bs are showing up in the same places. They're being seen in Florida. They're being seen all over. And they seem to hang around for a while. They've been clocked out of Pensacola at going exceeding speeds of Mach 12. They've actually physically got them on radar exceeding speeds of Mach 12 inside the atmosphere. There's actually pictures, spy satellite pictures of these things in orbit, so we know that they can both be in the atmosphere and in orbit. They seem to exhibit some type of magnetic field around the craft that cancels out gravity. And by when it cancels out gravity, they use the fields to push and pull the craft. It's very advanced technology. It's probably some type of nuclear propulsion. Stanton Friedman and I talked about this on a show about, because, you know, he used to work on nuclear aircraft. And we talked about that maybe the types of nuclear propulsion they may be using to create these fields. It's not beyond our scientific understanding, okay? And so for the people in there that may be skeptical about this, both Boeing and NASA in 1980 said that they were working on magnetic and gravitational fields. Well, get this, in 2000, both Boeing and NASA again said they were working on gravity drives and magnetic drives. Okay, now this is our own major people saying they were working on these. Now, all of a sudden, we have these black triangles popping up all over the place. And that's what most people say they are. They're about 60 yards by 60 yards by 60 yards, about 20 yards thick. And basically seem to be able to move inside the atmosphere with no effort at all. What's interesting about them, if you've ever seen the SR-71 flying, I've actually seen it at night, the nose cone glows red. Well, in order to make the nose cone glow red, it's got to be doing around Mach 5, Mach 6, which, by the way, our government doesn't argue with that. Its official speed is Mach 4, but they don't. The unofficial speeds, you know, which are still classified, are probably Mach 6, Mach 7, something like that. But they've already proved in order for them to glow, they've got to be going at least that fast. Well, the TRs don't glow, and they've been clocked at over Mach 12. So if they're not glowing, and they're being clocked at Mach 12, that suggests that there's something that's canceling out the effect of gravity against them. And you can tell this, if you've ever seen the shuttle come in on a night landing, because the shuttle comes in at about Mach 26, Mach 28, the whole damn shuttle is glowing. But yet, here these T3s are zipping around, zipping in space, zipping down, zipping over, zipping around, and they're not glowing. So this suggests there's some type of magnetic or gravitational field or some type of field that cancels out the effect of gravity or has some kind of inertia or dampers or something that cancels out these effects on this craft. Now, the government's been working on these for a while. They've talked about them themselves. I'm not sure that the Cass Landry case wasn't one of these that's gone awry. Because there was always something about that case that smacked of government and not extraterrestrial, especially since the people died of radiation contamination and stuff. That's the one where the ship went over the car and all the helicopters were following behind it. And that was back in the 80s. So it's a good possibility that that was actually what they had saw, was that particular type of crap. For the person that just asked me if that's an aurora, no, auroras are RAND scoop. Auroras actually take their fuel from the atmosphere. They can go out into space, and then they re-enter the atmosphere, and they run on ram scoop engines. They're very fast. There are prototypes in the work, but as far as I know, we haven't actually used any other than as prototypes. And the Delta Clipper is a vertical takeoff and landing craft that runs off of air compression, actually. It has a nuclear reactor that creates air bursts that actually raise it off the ground and move it around. It's a very cool craft, but it's not very efficient. So we will probably never see it actually deployed. And they got film of it, though. You can actually find it on the internet when they were testing it. It makes this weird sound. You know, it's popping like air pops all over the place. It's kind of cool to watch it, but it's not a very efficient craft. Now, I'll tell you something that was cool to watch. Los Alamos was using Star Wars lasers to launch Silver Disk into space. These disks are about 4 foot around. They've got vertical ribs on them, and they take the laser and they light it up underneath it, superheat the disc, and send them shooting up into space. They've been using this as a technology to try to figure out some type of elevator to bring cargo into space without using rocket engines. It's actually pretty cool, and it's not classified, by the way. People, a lot of what I'm talking about right now is not actually classified anymore. You can go check out. These are technologies that we were going to use, but now we have found something better. Remember, anytime the government cancels a technology, it's because they found something better to use. So if we're not using the Aurora and the Delta Clippers and these lasers, that means we have found a better way to do this. You know, it's like most people don't know that the Air Force and Navy both have a space program. Everybody thinks that NASA is a space program. Well, NASA is the people's space program. The Air Force and the Navy have their own classified space programs. And they're not classified in the fact that you can see launches. They do regular launches on a regular basis. And these are programs that have been around for 2 decades, I'm pretty sure. So, but most Americans, when I ask them, did you know the Air Force has a space program? Oh, you're crazy. No, look it up on the Internet. They sure the hell got one. They're like, what? I'm like, yeah. And, you know, most Americans don't know that. And you got to wonder, what the hell is the Air Force launching? Why isn't NASA launching it? NASA's got the space shuttle. Why is the Air Force launching stuff? And we know NASA brings classified satellites into space, so what the hell is the Air Force doing? What is the Navy doing? Well, they're not going to tell us, are they? Because it's military programs. But they do exist, and you can find them. So, you know, things like this is what people, you know, it amazes me how uneducated the average American is to what the government actually does. It's not that I'm saying the government's all evil or all bad, because I really don't think they are all evil or all bad. I think a lot of them are just people like us. But the overall, most people are more interested in going to the movies, buying some clothes, eating dinner, and playing with their kids than they are in what their actual government is doing. It's one of the reasons we're in the bullshit we're in today. But anyway, enough about all that. Yes, Air Force Space Command. Good point, Avenger. Oh, go ahead.
Well, the one thing I want to bring up is the mere fact that a lot of what we see out there, I know a lot about, as you know already, I'm well-versed in the area of anti-gravity research. And for everyone in the chat rooms as well as listening to the show tonight, my father is one of the last living, surviving witnesses to the Roswell event back in 1948 when he was 8 years old, if I'm correct at that time, or just turned 8, and he actually picked up some of the debris and took that debris home, and it was some of the memory metal, if I'm correct. Now, we can do a show on that later on when I am able to get one of the Roswell investigators on my show to talk about it, and I'll say more about it at that particular point in time.
Give Dennis a call.
Oh, yes, and I have had Dennis on one of my previous shows on another network.
Yeah, Dennis is great. Producer. I love Dennis. He's
and and the one thing I wanted to bring up to everyone is that I'm really well-researched and versed in the history of advanced electrogravitic systems development. Now, we can go back even as far back as the 1920s, 1926, when a young man who had just went into college had, even before he went into college, developed experiments showing that there was a counterforce to gravity. Now, later on, when he went to college, he later coined the term electrogravitic systems, and his name is Thomas Townsend Brown. Now, that was some of the preliminary work in what we're talking about. You can look up that information on the Internet and find out more information if you would like. But we've been developing, as well as the Germans in World War II developed anti-gravity systems that they used and that they were trying to develop as fighter aircraft before the end of the war. And had they had the opportunity to develop these systems, we would all be speaking German and saying Sieg Heil today.
That's it. Sieg Heil. Hey, Bush. No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I mean, you see the point I'm making.
Oh,
here.
Yeah. No, I
and also, we look at Operation Paperclip and the fact that we got a lot of those same Nazi scientists to come over to the United States who worked to develop our manned space program, as well as our military-industrial complex. These are provable facts. I've interviewed a good friend of mine, Jim Mars, the author of the book The Rise of the Fourth Reich, as well as the other the books Crossfire and The Alien Agenda. And he states that, you know, Operation Paperclip was the defining factor as to what happened to our modern-day society here in the United States since 1945. Now, we got to look at that particular point, that we may have a bunch of Nazis or neo-Nazis, now known as neocons, running the show right now. The heirs of the Nazi Party, per se.
That's my friend Charles Giuliano says that all the time. I'll have to introduce you to him. He's crazy as a loon, but he's pretty good. he's pretty good with that kind of stuff. That's what I was I won't get into that on air, but you got to sign us out of here, man. We're like 40 minutes over.
Okay, everybody. Well, I'd like to thank Joe for being on my show. I'd like to thank all of you in the chat rooms, as well as listening out there in the listening audience for tuning into my show tonight. And Joe, one more thing before you end, before we end the show, do you have any website information? Like, if all of us here don't know it anyway, but for those who may be listening,
radio side
first time.
Well, guys, www.paranormalradionetwork.com. That is the main radio site. .org is the archive site. Of course, my all-time favorite site is www.icar1.com, which is the International Community of Alien Research. And then the site y'all have to go see on Wednesdays is www.ufoundercover.com. Come join us on Wednesday. I had to get a plug in.
Well, and another thing before I let you go, I'd like for you to call me back, and I'd like to schedule you again to be on the show, because I think there's a lot more we could talk about.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can see we're easily going into the second hour without any problems at all. And to the person asked about the room, I know I've seen some admins, if y'all want to open the other room, if I'm going to get something to eat when I get off the phone with Paul, because I am starving to death. I haven't eaten since like 5 o'clock, and we're on show number 3 today, but... Go ahead, kick us out of here, man. I'll get the archive posted up.
Okay, remember, on this show, you will hear the truth. What you do with it is up to you. This is Paul Richard Price signing off today. God bless, and you guys have a great day and a good weekend. Good night.